Good morning, everyone. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic.
We begin, as always, by acknowledging that Film Picnic is recorded on the traditional and ancestral lands of Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. This land is referred to as unceded territory, as it was not given up freely and continues to be home for the Indigenous communities from which it is stolen.
It is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land. Happy Halloween!
Happy spooky season, Hannah!
Spooky season!
It is officially November today.
So it's no longer spooky season.
Well, I'm gonna allow it to extend. I'm gonna give it a little
an extra day
if I can claim the authority. It is a Friday.
People are having their Halloween weekend this weekend.
I think it's been interesting this year to see the Halloween weekend, the Halloween phenomenon extend over 2 weekends. Because then when it's in the middle of the week, I guess it was a Thursday, but there were plenty of Halloween things happening last weekend.
There were. I was just thinking as we were walking into the nest today, I was like, oh my goodness, remember my first year's Halloween weekend? I went all out. I was at parties. This year, it's been a lot more wholesome, a lot more chill. The festivities have been... I went to P&E last night. I went to Fright Nights.
There we go. Some spooky celebrations.
Yes. And what I realized about myself is that I think I've aged out of theme parks. Amusement parks. Rides make me feel unwell. It doesn't matter how small they are. I don't feel well. But the haunted house was interesting. That was fun.
We learned. What was the scariest part?
Honestly, I didn't like when the people were alive. I didn't care about
like actors?
Yeah, I didn't like the actors. They creeped me out. Like
Were they not skilled enough?
No, they were skilled. Like, I don't know. I literally walked through the haunted house with my hands over my eyes. I'm such a little baby. But I didn't mind when, inanimate objects would jump out at me and weird sounds would come out and whatever. Mm. But as soon as I realized there was someone standing in the corner of the room and they were a human being.
Oh, immediately no.
Horrifying.
Immediately
no. What are you going to do? Are you going to run at me? I know you can't touch me, but I don't
It's the not knowing.
Exactly.
It's the tension building.
Exactly.
Today is a really exciting and fun episode. Also,
oh, yes.
For those of you that can't see us right now, we are...
I'm wearing black lipstick.
Hannah's in black lipstick. I'm in all black. Honestly, I put my hair in braids.
Very and Wednesday.
It's giving Wednesday. There's some spooky vibes in here today. My Halloween yesterday was spent, all of my friends dressed up as different versions of Kate Bush. I'm not going to say we're extremely iconic, but I will say
you are
very
iconic.
Yes. No, it was great.
Georgia, and then, you have such a sweet relationship with your roommates.
Oh,
she showed me a photo
fun.
This morning in the car of them all dressed up as different Kate Bushes. And I was like, this is amazing. This is so wholesome.
I was Wuthering Heights Kate Bush. That was my, because who doesn't love to dance?
And may I say, red is your color.
Well, thank you, Hannah. which is interesting because I think red is your color also.
Oh, red can be both of our color.
And it is our color.
And it is.
Why did that sound so politician-y?
And it is.
Okay,
here.
I need to get rid of that news announcer voice.
But today, you guys.
Today.
We thought we would talk about the horror genre and how it has shaped the industry. There is so much, too much to go into there, but Georgia has done an incredible, she's put her film study skills to use and has done an incredible amount of research for us. So we have lots to talk about. Also just our thoughts and personal opinions and tastes. And
there, I just think the horror industry, the horror genre, personal favorite.
Me too.
Spooky season
horror.
Is where I'm thriving.
I, growing up, couldn't... I used to think that Harry Potter was the scariest movie one could ever watch.
Okay, but the fourth one, when they're underwater and the mermaids... The mermaids in the Goblet of Fire, I remember seeing that as a child, and that was
the
really...
The second one with Moaning Myrtle in the bathroom. Okay,
okay,
something about
like a woman.
Something about bathrooms to me growing up were so terrifying. I was telling Georgia in the car.
Maybe it's the lighting.
I grew up in Japan, so... horror stories were big, and I genuinely I couldn't use the bathroom at school by myself until I was 13 because of this horror stories that I heard growing up about ghosts in the bathroom that would come and kill you, and I was just, it was really scary.
But you know what, Hannah, we've cultivated a safe space in the studio today, so we're going to talk about it, but we're safe.
But now horror
no
is
here.
Like one of my favorite genres.
Beautiful. Hannah, what's your favorite horror movie?
Okay, I have said for many years it's Hereditary. I really like that movie. That's one of the few horror movies that I've like consistently rewatched, and it was an experience watching it in the theater or whatever. However, last year I watched Talk to Me.
Oh my goodness, Talk to Me.
And it was
also A24.
I'm a big fan of A24. Oh. Wow, I'm so
we'll get there, guys. We'll get there.
But Talk to Me, it was the first horror movie that I'd seen in a while that I actually had to sleep with the lights on that night. I was scared.
Can I say something crazy about that movie?
Please.
I went to a midnight viewing at the Rio by myself.
Rio is certainly a type of vibe to watch a horror movie.
The Rio is great. Also, where I went to Rocky Horror last night. Did I say I went to Rocky?
You didn't.
Maybe I didn't. Oh my goodness, guys, I went to Rocky Horror last night.
At midnight.
At midnight. Beautiful annual Halloween event. Just the spookiest, craziest, freakiest thing. I did.
Oh.
Yeah. This is year two.
Maybe I'll go next year.
Yeah, we should go. Yeah. I love when they didn't have a cast, which I was a little bit bummed about. Because sometimes, you know, with the Rocky Horror tradition, they'll have like a theater troupe at the front doing it. But I think
Wait, what?
They didn't.
It wasn't a movie?
It's a movie, and people will sing and dance on the stage in front of it while it's happening in the costume of the characters.
Wait, that's really fun. Yeah. Wait, are you saying that these are paid actors to do that, or this is the general public that go up on stage and can do that?
Most of the time, paid actors. Not to expose tea. To be honest, I don't know what the tea is. I think there was some kind of, like, the actors that normally performed at the Rio had unionized or, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure.
No.
I'm not exactly sure why the Rio didn't have a cast this year or last year when I went. But they did have an MC, and they do bring all the people that have never been to Rocky before up on stage. They're the virgins.
Oh, that'll be me next year. Yeah. I've seen it. I've seen the live musical, and I've seen the movie, but...
Okay. Well, you're in for a treat. Everybody, I will say, too, the person that won... There's a costume contest because people come dressed as the characters. I went as Kate Bush. I fit right in. It was fine.
What?
I just went in my Kate Bush costume, yes. And it was freaky. But everybody, there were someone, the person that won the costume contest was dressed as Tobias Fünke from Arrested Development.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. Was it a really obvious costume?
It was.
Or did they have to explain it?
Blue morph suit with like Daisy Duke denim shorts.
That's too good. That's
the mustache,
yes,
the glasses.
He never takes
He's the never nude.
Off.
Yeah.
The never nude.
Sorry, guys. We'll dive into horror now. But that was necessary mentioning. My favorite horror film.
Oh yes.
Because it feels like an obligatory mention. I love The Shining. I've mentioned that before.
Mentioned The Shining. I haven't seen it, which is horrifying. I know you guys.
I haven't seen the first Twilight, and
that's
that feels
even
equitable
more horrifying
between the two of us. So. At some point, we'll watch both.
Yeah.
And
can I also note about Talk to Me? I'm also really proud because that was an indie film that was shot in Australia. I wish I could remember the names of the directors. I'm so sorry. I know that they have a big following on YouTube.
You know what? Now that you say that, I did clock the accents.
They're Australian. It's an Australian film.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, a few of my actor friends in Australia know a lot of the people that worked on that set. But I just thought it was really cool that it was such an independent production. Obviously, they put a lot of money into it, but it was picked up by A24. It wasn't like A24 produced it or anything like that. So
we could talk so much about A24.
Go
maybe,
Australia.
Maybe we got to do a deep dive.
We
on
do.
Them
I did a whole paper on it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
We're essentially just gonna take. We have a chronology of.
Take it away,
honestly,
Georgia.
The horror industry, yeah. But we have some fun facts sprinkled in, and then we'll take a little break, and then we'll get into some of the contemporary things that are happening in the horror genre.
Yes.
To begin, way back when, the first filmmakers were becoming established in the 1890s. That was when there were like the first kind of concept of a filmmaker was emerging. Mm-hmm. I had thought upon originally doing this research that the first horror movie that people were thinking about was the like 1920s German Expressionism and
the
Cabinet of Dr.
Caligari. That's the first one that came to my mind.
Yes, which probably the first one that comes to most people's mind. I was doing some digging and I found that the very first horror movie, it wasn't even considered horror really because that wasn't a concept yet.
There were no genres.
1896. So throwback.
Yeah. I remember back in my day.
It was rediscovered in 1977, so it was lost to the world up until that point. This man is French, and I'm going to...
Le manoir
du diable.
There you go.
That was terrible. I think his name is Georges Méliès.
Uh-huh.
At least, well, I know that's what his name is. Am I pronouncing it correctly? I'm not sure. anyways, but this film was 3 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube now, which is also just incredible how technology survives. You can literally watch a horror movie from 1896 on YouTube, which is crazy.
Wow.
It was called The Haunted Castle or House of the Devil. But yeah, it was just, it had spooky things.
What do you mean, or? Is it like, it had
I think that was like English,
was
kind of like, translation. Okay. Yeah. Some kind of discrepancy there. There were skeletons, ghosts, bats. The devil was there. It wasn't supposed to be scary.
Okay.
You know what? We should.
More wondrous. I see.
More wondrous. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily meant to be. It wasn't supposed to terrify its audience, but it did have supernatural elements, which is why we can consider it perhaps the first horror film,
mm-hmm.
because it was kind of including those
it
types
had
of things.
Moving
along, the literary years. I'm not going to do the accent. That was so bad.
Please do everything in the accent, Georgia.
I'll work on it. Actually, you know what, you guys? Side note. Yesterday, I was asking Hannah if she'd ever, like, what her process was to take on an American accent when she's acting, and that was just really funny to me.
And I go, water.
Water.
Water. I actually don't know when I sound Australian versus American Canadian.
I think it's the A's.
It is the A's. The Australians will never claim that I have an Australian accent, and the Americans think I have don't sound that. But anyway,
moving on. Yes, okay, so 1900s, 1920s, supernatural things were coming up.
Frankenstein.
Yes,
what
prominent.
What is this accent today?
I don't know.
Sorry,
what we're
you
doing.
Guys.
We're just going
so
with it.
I'm so sorry if
we're going
offended.
With it. prominent literary works. We're seeing the first adaptations of films, or adaptations of literary works.
Mm.
First Frankenstein.
Was Frankenstein, was it also German Expressionism, the first Frankenstein, or was it?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Well, you're probably right.
Who knows?
Sorry, I just hit my microphone. Apologies, guys.
That's okay.
But what is German Expressionism, Georgia?
Yes.
Should we explain what that is?
No, let's elaborate. Essentially, artistic... Well, it applies to film. It's a broader artistic movement that was really popularized in the 1920s in Germany. Emphasizes the artist's feelings over a realistic representation of reality. So
it's got those like stark shadows,
mm-hmm.
really interesting shaped buildings, lots of contrast,
right.
Extreme camera angles, and extreme makeup as well.
Oh, yeah. High contrast, like the lighting was very high contrast too, deep, just a lot of shadows. Sets that did not make sense in
yeah.
a way, like that seemed kind of like an illusion or impractical somehow. It kind of creating this fantasy element.
I'm drawing a very weird connect, but I'm just, for those who like haven't watched or studied German Expressionism, would you say that like Tim Burton's style of animation could look similar to like the stylistic elements in German Expressionism? Well, I'm, again, just comparing it to The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I haven't watched a huge amount of German Expressionist films, but I don't know. I'm just imagining the world, and it's very dark and very, I guess it's very gothic. I don't know.
I mean, I guess, to be honest, I guess also exposing myself right now, I'm not extremely well-versed in Tim Burton. I have like a very, I like Nightmare Before Christmas. Like,
yeah, I grew up on Tim Burton. I watched a lot of...
Were you in the Corpse Bride moment?
I was in the Corpse Bride. Again, it scared me, but my best friend Amy, shout out Amy, she loved Corpse Bride. She loved The Nightmare Before Christmas. Is Coraline Tim Burton?
Oh, this is embarrassing.
Sorry, this
I think
is a
it
terrible
is.
Question.
I think it is.
But yeah, I watched a lot of those kinds of things. I think so. I will say that I drew that connection correctly. And you cinephiles can tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think the spooky, the darkness, the
yeah.
kind of... I would say there's high contrast.
Yeah.
But anyways, at that time, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari was very popular. That was when the original Nosferatu came out, which Nosferatu is still...
That's a vampire
I think,
movie, right?
Yes, like very, very the vampire movie.
Yeah.
Count Orlok, which is great because Nosferatu is still being screened today, has still maintained this weird cult following after it.
Oh my god, his face is so creepy.
Yeah, like...
I'm looking up photos right now.
Adaptation kind of Dracula, like, just was terrifying, was unsettling to people.
Ew, look at his fingers. This gives...
Yeah, no, it's gross. It's gross. But you know what's amazing, too? Actually, speaking of the Rio, I just went to go see Nosferatu synced with Radiohead.
Sorry, what?
Synced with Radiohead.
What do you mean synced?
Because,
like,
okay...
the music was Radiohead?
We didn't even say this. German Expressionism is silent.
Oh, yeah, film. It's silent film. So they have the whole, like, giant facial expression and then text. Mm-hmm.
There's some intertitles. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But yeah, so those were kind of, I feel like that's where horror really got its
start.
That's where we started seeing, or the public was starting to react. And it was, you know, just like, really, I think Cabinet of Dr. Caligari was first horror film of real quality.
I'm pretty sure it was the first movie I watched in my first film studies class here at UBC, Fist 100.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, actually, no, it wasn't. It was Rosebud. What was that?
Citizen Kane?
Yes.
Rosebud.
It was Citizen Kane. But anyway.
Okay. Beautiful. Amazing. Moving on. 1930s.
Yeah.
Golden age of horror. Why is it called this? Silent era is giving way to technological processes. The, you know, capability of sound and cinema is developing. There's dialogue. So now we're exploring kind of fear that can build through sound and through tension, which we know in horror films is so important.
So
if
important.
You're scared,
sound.
I've been that person who gets scared at a horror movie and I have to turn my laptop, or if I'm watching on my laptop, like if I'm too scared, I turn off the sound and then suddenly it's not so scary.
I mean,
anymore.
Yeah, sound has a huge effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I think us as independent indie starting out filmmakers learn in our first few films in our sound is something that we often forget unless we're super interested in it, and then mm-hmm. it can really make or break your project. So I'm not surprised at all that of course it elevates.
Oh yeah. Some of these first, you know, the sound movies are called the talkies. That's aww. Just the way that people refer to them. Yeah.
I don't know why that makes me think of my mom. I know she wasn't alive cute. In the 30s, but sorry, Mom.
No, I like it. I like that connection. We had a second iteration of Frankenstein in 1931, The Mummy, first color adaptation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So we kind of see monsters coming into play. 1930s was also the first time that horror was used to describe the genre. Before that, it was, again, kind of like romance, melodrama, dark elements, the presence of skeletons, not necessarily suggesting that skeletons were scary. And we had first horror stars being born. Bela Lugosi. Is that the way you pronounce it? I don't know. But she was in Dracula and got pretty famous for that.
I'm wondering if it's important to note that a lot of these mainstream, like, highly recognized horror films did come from a lot of Western countries, right? Are we talking about...
We are talking about Western... Yeah.
Yeah.
We're about to get into it, actually.
There's a lot of horror from many, many, many other places, which we will touch on. But I just wanted to disclaim that what we're going through right now, I think, pertains a lot to Hollywood and that type of...
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, that's German.
Yeah.
Yes. But, yeah.
Yeah, no,
this
that's...
what was recognized
great
in
note
Hollywood.
To make. Well, speaking of Hollywood, yeah, so... 1931, you know, we have Universal Pictures producing really iconic films, Frankenstein, Dracula, monsters that were really memorable, psychological horror with sound, The Mummy, The Invisible Man, The Bride of Frankenstein, those were kind of films that they made to continue capitalizing on this.
Which they still do.
Which
days.
They still do.
Let's remake if, and if remake something and works, remake and ring it out.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
Or I guess in this sense, well, maybe there was innovation. I don't know. 1932, the public is becoming unsettled. There is censorship taking place. There's public outcry, which we'll get a little bit more into right after this. But 1932 was the year that what film was released? It's Freaks.
Oh, I'm panicked.
Segue.
Like, oh my god, am I supposed to
no. A key, a very key element within the horror genre is, I think, this development of what we can refer to as exploitation cinema, kind of alongside yes. and underground to some extent, which we'll touch on several times throughout this episode. But I think Freaks is just a really, you know, it's kind of coming along first in our chronology here in the 30s, but it's also just a really prime example of exploitation of a demographic for shock value
yeah.
and exploitation cinemas.
And I'm assuming Freaks was exploiting people with disabilities in particular?
People with disabilities.
Or are you talking about the cast of the crew?
No. So, yeah, the subject of the film themselves.
Was exploitative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
they still do a lot in horror movies.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting. I think there's a conversation to be had about new representation of, well, how do I articulate this in a good way? I think there are representations of people with physical dismemberments and disabilities in stories now that have to do with their physical dismemberments, mm-hmm. but it's not exploitative in the way that it used to be. I'm thinking particularly of A Different Man with Sebastian Stan.
Oh.
Just a film that's about to come out. Or I guess you could even think about... well, I guess I don't know very much about The Elephant Man either, but I know that was a story about a person with physical dismemberment.
Was that
anyways.
I know that story.
Yes. You know, but yeah. I think there's, you know, there's something to be said about why a studio is choosing to concentrate on a story.
Yeah, and, why are we circling it?
Is it lucrative because are we telling the story because we think it's important or because people are going to stare at it and it's going to make them uncomfortable and it can make us a lot of money?
Yeah.
Anyways.
There's a lot of that in horror.
There's going on in the 30s. As if you're a film person, if you're not a film person.
Hi. Welcome to our film
podcast. Thank you for listening
show.
Either way. Before 1934, there was something called the Motion Picture Production Code, called the Code, pretty much existed.
Also the Hays Code.
Yeah. Existed as like a self-policing measure for the film industry. There was just like a really simply laid out list of actions, themes that were not acceptable content. But come 1934, Joseph Breen becomes the head of what was newly called the Production Code Administration. And then this Hays Code started to really be enforced, especially by like 1935, 1936. So this meant that...
So he kind of like ramped it up?
Yes.
Okay.
He ran it like the Navy.
Okay.
I've never used that phrase. Whatever. I worked it in. Yeah. So essentially they've got... Hollywood has this new crackdown on what can be produced. And this man was... not a fan of horror movies. He, you know, we're talking about censorship in the sense of, you know, there's very overt Catholic sensibilities.
Yeah.
You know, nudity.
And there's a lot of that in horror.
Yeah, which is, you know, yeah, which is kind of where
how
that thrives.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
Boobs.
warned against such things as depictions of, quote, brutality and possible gruesomeness. So
that's a little more understandable.
In the horror genre, what do you do with that? You know, if that's what your genre is.
You shake hands instead of stab.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It's so interesting to, like, go back in time and look at all the effect that kind of the Hays Code has
also
had
just
on
to see, yeah, that, like, outside of horror, just how different systems, different codes, different whatever, really shaped the way that the film industry has formed, because it shaped what films were able to be made, who was able to see them, where it was able to be distributed. And these policymakers have and continue to have a major effect on the media that we consume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely important note. Yeah. And I like, you know, at this time we had early exploitation films. Again, we talk about Freaks, but the, you know,
Freaks,
like,
crazy.
Cautionary
crazy
tales
title.
Were being created, you know, like films that were warning against these kind of bad behaviors or kind of depicting it as, you know, like illness or something. Reefer Madness was 1938.
Oh,
Yeah. You know, like, there's, so, which I will say, like, some of
is
these.
Is that, like, addiction, kind of commenting on?
It's a little. What even? Yeah, I would say it's still kind of, it walks a line.
Okay.
Which I think is also a key part of, like, exploitation film, just being more underground, being more out of the mainstream.
Yes.
You could kind of get away with more if you were doing it in a low key, mm-hmm. you know, like, it, I mean, it was an interesting time for sure.
Yeah.
Oh man, you guys, I did so much.
There's so much research.
If I read everything that's on this document in front of us right now, we're not going to have time. but that's okay. Speeding along. 40s, 50s, rise of film noir, social commentary. Ooh. 50s was definitely more rise of science
cats.
Fiction.
Wait, no, cats, cat people. Never mind. I just read cats and I got excited. I was like, whoa.
I never clocked you for a cats fan. Are you a
I
cats
actually
fan?
Have never seen it.
Okay.
James Corden's in it, right?
This is a safe space. I don't want to mention that man's name.
Okay, period.
I'm sorry. You know what? I shouldn't be so rude to James Corden. I just
no, it's okay.
I don't like his vibe.
That's fair. I respect that.
Yeah.
Won't be brought up again.
Okay, thank you. Also, just I mean, you know, considering the development of film, we also have to consider the state of the world. 1940s horrors intertwining with film noir. There's psychological. There's you know, you're kind of they're exploring these themes of repression and fear. Also,
the war in the world.
The war happening in the world.
Definitely affects what art is being made.
Yeah.
And what people are afraid of and what people are, I guess, trying to make others afraid of, right?
Yeah. It's so interesting, too. Like, you know, come, especially I think in the 50s and later years, like, you know, with war ravaging Europe and like nuclear fallout and these, you know, big bombs being used and those kinds of things, horror antagonists started becoming less supernatural and more worldly related.
Yeah,
yeah, like radioactive mutation as a fear. Like Godzilla, which is like, you know.
Which was a metaphor for the U.S. And like nuclear weapons pretty much destroying.
Also just heavily like featuring a lot of military.
Yeah, militia.
Aspects and within horror films. 1950s saw rise in science fiction horror. There was definitely some Cold War influence. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956, was just a really big moment too, worthwhile mentioning.
Sorry, I'm just reading this thing here.
Oh, guys, I sprinkled in little fun facts.
This
I sprinkled in
crazy.
Little fun facts
I was
for
reading
us.
This in the car over.
Do you want to read it up?
Yeah,
please?
Director Philip Kaufman wanted Cartwright's reaction to be genuine, so he kept the actress in the dark about the ending of the film, which is, I think, definitely a thing that directors do, but also morally questionable. When Donald Sutherland reveals that his body had also been snatched, I haven't seen the movie. I'm personally not sure what that means. But the shock sent the actress, her, into a full-blown panic mode, which is, I mean, wow.
When we're talking about Cartwright, we're talking about Veronica Cartwright.
Yes.
Protagonist in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yeah, I think overarching, like,
have you seen this movie?
A while ago.
Yeah.
Yes. Freaky, weird, freaky film. I think just like it's so interesting to see. It makes me so happy. I guess this is like deviating a little bit. It makes me so happy to see that people, or at least I feel like the people that I'm working with and up and coming filmmakers now, care so much about conditions of production, because generally speaking, the less money involved, the more kind of messed up it can be.
People are,
but then you also see like Hollywood productions that are terrible things to their.
Well, I remember being in Portugal at Fest, and one of the directors was talking about how their actors didn't know what was going on. Like in each day, they would come in, and it would kind of be a surprise for them. Like he would keep a lot of them in the dark for certain things to keep their reactions, quote unquote, genuine. And while I see why one would want to do that, I also, like, that, the mental health of your actors is so important, you guys.
It is so important.
And people over projects.
No kidding.
Is what I'm going to say.
Yeah. I wanted to mention this one because this is one of the first horror films that I saw. Was it one of the first? I guess it was definitely the first old one that I ever saw. The Blob from 1958. There was like a weird, again, kind of like representing these like social anxieties of people, and I think the, you know, war had people in a really weird specific headspace. But I was reading about fear of conformity, or like kind of mass conformity and mass culture and becoming a cog in the machine. Yeah. And The Blob is literally a gigantic amorphous pile of goo that goes around consuming people. And if it catches you, you are consumed by it.
Same.
Which was just so weird. It looks like this giant pile of grape jelly that was just chasing after people.
I wonder how they did that, like, special effects-wise.
Yeah, you know what I'm just thinking, too? I guess spoiler, if you're going to watch The Blob. Spoiler alert. I'm pretty sure that the protagonists in the film escape it by, like, climbing into a freezer. And for some reason, The Blob, like, didn't like the cold.
That's hilarious.
Like, super arbitrary. Like, anyways. Okay, guys, I'm so sorry. I'm going to speed us along here because there's just so much to talk about.
Oh my goodness, there's so much to talk about before we go on a little break.
Okay, 50s and early 60s. With exploitation cinema, we've got biker movies, troubled teens, the nudies. A subgenre, I guess we could call, of exploitation cinema.
Subgenre?
Yeah.
Sorry, I heard sleb for some reason and I said, that's a new word.
Well, maybe I'm making new words today. Okay, yes, we got Rise of B-movies, midnight movies, people going...
B-movies are lower quality, like they're not the mainstream Hollywood movies mm-hmm. that are coming out with high budgets. They're more independent.
Like the B-side of a record.
Period.
Yeah.
Or like a B-list celebrity.
Oh, a B-list celebrity. Yeah, beautiful, amazing. People going out to theaters at midnight to go watch freaky things.
The 60s.
I know. And I'll just acknowledge too, like, there's, you could do entire essays, we could do entire episodes on each decade or probably even a year in any horror film moment. We're just giving a very kind of a overview of what's going on.
Yeah.
60s, we've got avant-garde psychological horror happening. Also, these really weird, like, theatrical tactics going on, like electric buzzers being installed into theater seats.
Oh,
like,
it's giving 4D.
Paid actors in the audience screaming, pretending to faint. Like, the people making these movies were trying to do anything to scare their audiences.
I would be scared.
Which I think also
you don't have to do much to scare me.
Speaks to the lasting nature of the horror genre. People like to be scared.
Yeah.
Why has it remained lucrative so long?
Very true. Also, like, people like to be scared. It has made the industry very lucrative. I remember in my, in my Asian cinema class, we touched on horror genre and specifically in Japan and how that and those B-movies and those homestyle movies actually, like, rejigged the whole industry because they were easy to make, they were cheaper, they were low budget, and people were consuming them. People were watching them at home, and... It helped put a lot more money back into the film industry when it was on a decline in, gosh, I wish I could tell you what year.
That's okay.
But it was around the Godzilla time.
Yeah, yeah. Lots happening there. Yeah. Anything and everything tried during the 50s and 60s in an attempt to further scare audiences. This kind of spilled over into other genres during the period, but, you know, quickly died down because it was expensive to do. For horror in particular, this kind of gave way to the opposite end of the spectrum, and these incredibly low-budget productions started happening, which, again, just, like, talking about exploitation cinema, or just, you know, exploitative working practices, the lower the budget, the poorer the working conditions, which is, you know, just a reality.
I mean, that's still the
case
today.
Yeah. Late 60s onwards, American people had an appetite for gore.
Of course they did.
For slashers. being made for under $1 million, which...
Speaking of slashers.
No, Hannah, please mention it. I was going to mention it
if
you didn't.
Guys, the first feature film I ever did was a slasher, and it was so much fun. It's called It's a Wonderful Knife. It's, like, it's very camp. But it was, as an actor, it was one of the most fun things that I've ever done. I loved screaming, crying, running, having fake blood all over me, getting to do my stunts. Like, that was fun. I love a good slasher.
Also, I'll say too, I love that it's Halloween and
like, it was a Halloween Christmas. Movie.
Like, how fun is that?
Yeah.
Like, just the dream.
Yeah, yeah. It was great.
That's why I love Nightmare Before Christmas so much, because it's Halloween and Christmas.
Because you can watch it on either occasion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so funny also because American Thanksgiving, in my mind, is like, I mean, in reality, American Thanksgiving is in the middle of those two holidays.
Right.
Which is funny because in Canada it's not, it's before. But then I was always like, why don't they talk about Thanksgiving in this movie? It just is like completely glossed over. Why was I so upset about that? I have no idea. Okay, yes. Goodness. So many things to talk about. Late 60s onwards. People wanted gore. People wanted slasher films. Night of the Living Dead came out in 1968. Made for just over $100,000, which is crazy. Went on to gross $30 million.
What?
Crazy. Yeah. Also, we can't not mention Alfred Hitchcock and Psycho.
Yeah.
That was 1960.
Is it crazy for me to out myself and say I haven't seen Psycho? I've seen Bates Motel, though.
I haven't seen Bates Motel.
It's a TV show based on Psycho.
Have you seen, are you a Hitchcock person or maybe?
I have. I've seen Rear Window.
Okay.
I've seen a few, yes.
Okay. I was going to say I just watched The Birds.
I don't know if I'm a Hitchcock person.
Okay.
As which, like which him as a person.
I say that I did enjoy.
I think
films.
I appreciate his auteurism.
Mm-hmm. Auteurism. Yes. Sorry, I was just repeating the word for fun. I wasn't trying to correct you.
No.
Okay. Yeah. In exploitation cinema, let's acknowledge the 60s had sexploitation rising. Just like there were films with a lot of nudity that was happening. And then
love bit of nudity.
Yeah. Like there was another little, I guess, subgenre. I'm not even sure if that's the correct word, to be honest. Roughies. Movies that were featuring kidnapping, violence.
Oh, that's less fun.
Yeah. I guess viewer discretion is advised. Listener discretion.
I think something that's really interesting about the horror genre is that you can explore so much. You can explore some really interesting topics like Jordan Peele has done. And like, you know, it leaves a lot of space to kind of explore these in like a psychological and maybe like literal way.
Mm-hmm.
Issues that are going on within society. But then also it leaves a lot of room for people who are not, it's not their place to explore those issues, to explore those issues. And maybe in a way that is poor. Exploiting other people's trauma, exploiting other people's historical backgrounds. And, I also think, like, even the use of certain like, horror stories, like, certain ghost stories, certain mythical creatures and mythical figures, like, where are these? It's important to consider, where are they coming from?
Yeah.
Where did they originate? Who has the right to talk about these things?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, just... That's a beautiful sentiment.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Guys, again, there's just so much.
Should we take a very quick break?
Let's take a quick little break.
A very quick break.
We'll come circle right back. Continue talking about all these very interesting horror topics on Film Picnic on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Turn your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Permitti or saxophone Lenui. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalists, saxophonists, composers, and musicians of our great era. Such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Ehler, Solange, Ghostface Killah, Warner Coleman, Sonny Rollins. Thank you. That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primitive or saxophone la nuit.
The leaves are browning, and I'm pissed. Does anybody relate to this? Oh my God, you're right, Angels. I gotta read some Discorder magazine.
Really, no one can be blamed but myself for holding out hope that this world could only contain a certain amount of cruelty.
God damn!
Were I to make a choice again, I would spend a week collecting all the broken glass and rusty shards I can from across the city and form a nest with which I will lay myself to my grave. Oh my God, I've never felt so seen. Thank you, Discorder Magazine.
Finally, someone understands.
And for the rest of you in the Lower Mainland, find voices that you connect to in this issue of Discorder. You can find all of the distribution locations by visiting citr.ca/Discorder/subscribe/.
It is time to get your spook on. And there's nothing like getting spooky with a good horror film. And this time, Slashback is coming right at you on October 24th. Slashback is a horror film that features Micah and her ragtag group of friends as they take on an alien invasion in their tiny Arctic hamlet. And it's up to them to fight back using makeshift weapons and horror movie knowledge. Arts Indigenous Student Advising is putting on Slashback, a film directed by an Inuit director and set in Nunavut. The horror film will be playing at the Norm Theater this October 24th. Only $5 entry for public, and it's free for all UBC Indigenous students. Doors at 5:45 p.m. We'll see you at the Norm Theater this October 24th. Experience the world of education this Saturday, October 26th at the Vancouver Convention Center. You can meet with top universities, graduate schools, and professional schools from Canada and around the world. Register online to stay up to date and check in at the fair to be eligible for prizes, including a free flight to anywhere in the world on Air Canada. Explore your future with Study and Go Abroad this October 26th by registering now at studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/. studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/.
And we're back. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And this is Film Picnic. We're still here talking about horror. There's
so much to go into.
There's so much to get through, you guys.
I think we might have to do a whole nother episode on like some of the horror topics because,
honestly, kind of naive of me to be like, oh yeah, we can talk about the whole like history of horror in 1 hour.
Well, you know what? We touched on it, so you guys know where it's come from, where it's been.
Truly.
Well, not necessarily where it's come from, but where it started to become recognized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to take us through, kind of just before our break here, we got up to 60s. We were talking about 60s and gore. I'm just going to give us a brief little overview because we have some of the things we want to talk about. We have such a limited amount of time left.
Okay.
It always goes by so fast.
It does.
70s. Just a great era for film. Exploitation film is evolving in the 70s.
What a great era.
What a great era. John Waters, Pink Flamingos, premieres. This is merging comedy and shock value. For all you people who love Chapel Roan, she did an homage to Pink Flamingos and John Waters and has dressed up like those characters before, which is just really cool, really campy. Blaxploitation is growing in popularity, which is
that is something that I wanted to touch on.
Yeah,
But I mean, yeah, this is what I'm talking about when you're saying you're pulling people's stories and kind of exploiting that. There's a lot of things that happen in horror movies that actually happen to people of color, and it's kind of dramatized and made into this big, spooky, scary thing. And you're really just ripping off other people's trauma when there's a white director there making that type of thing. And there's also, you know, I mean, I know we're talking about the 70s, but nowadays there are similar things going on. I mean, that still happens, but I was talking about this with Georgia in the car about just like what spaces there are for filmmakers of color. And I think that, yes, it's great that there have been a lot of wonderful horror films and coming from black filmmakers and filmmakers of color. However, it's great that there's that space, but it's a shame that a lot of the space that is created for filmmakers of color and black filmmakers in particular is the space to then talk about and exploit their trauma and their generational trauma. But yeah, we can go into that at another time.
Yeah. I will just mention too, one of my, actually like maybe one of my all time favorite films, Coffee with Pam Grier, just absolutely incredible. Just badass woman, really, really cool film.
I looked up Coffee as if that would come up with the film. Okay.
It's spelled with a K.
Oh,
Coffee with
okay.
a K. Or no, Coffy. I'm so sorry.
Oh, okay.
How upsetting for me to spell it incorrectly. But yeah, just like ooh, actually really truly
she's
badass
hot.
Woman.
Whoa, yeah. I want to be her.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, please watch it. really, really.
Oh, and it was shot on Super 8.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to shoot some of my thesis film on Super 8.
Woo-woo.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Exploitation films. It's evolving in the 70s. There's like war exploitation films, Men Behind the Sun, Isla She Wolf of the SS. We have sexual assault revenge films.
Which I just think is never necessary. I personally am like, let's just throw that in the garbage.
Those were kind of finding success in grindhouse theaters. So again, really, definitely not your typical.
I don't mean don't get revenge.
Yeah. Again, yeah. Okay. International aspect. You know what? God, there's just so much to talk about. Okay. Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 1974 and The Exorcist. The Exorcist, fun fact, the first horror film to be nominated at the Academy Awards for Best Picture.
Wow.
Yeah. These are pushing boundaries. There's kind of elements of realism. There's like, if we watch The Exorcist, her head turns all the way around.
I do love
crazy.
A good horror.
Yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Especially when it has an actual story.
Yeah.
And it's not just gore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a big deal. Also, I think really interesting. Chainsaws have had a really long and storied history in cult cinema since then. And anytime there's a chainsaw, it's kind of like nod.
An homage.
Yeah. 1975 is the year of Rocky Horror, which has just, yeah, maintained a beautiful
super
cult
camp.
Cinema following. Just really devoted people. Group of people who love it.
Just like me and Twilight.
Yes, just like you and Twilight. Jaws came out in 1975. This was a really big deal for release strategy because Jaws...
It was the first, like, blockbuster one, right?
Yeah. Hundreds of theaters at once. Wide release strategy, which I think The Godfather had maybe tried. But Jaws was, like, a big... Da 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 da! Just changed the film industry, to
be honest. That was, like, our little intro
that sound. Yeah, that was a funny little moment there. Yeah, showing. I mean, Jaws. I would call it a thriller. I'm not sure.
I would say, like, call it a horror.
I just felt like I had to mention it because also the shark is kind of a monster, and that monster films are a big part of horror
period.
Cinema. Period.
Why yes?
Okay. Yeah, we're getting more into slashers.
The screams.
There's a cult. There's devil worship happening. Yeah, we've got The Exorcist, Omen, yes. Supernatural horror, back in style. But coming into the 80s, we've got works of before the 80s, but Stephen King. So we're back to literary adaptations.
What a king.
That was funny.
Thank
that was
you.
Really funny.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Carrie, 1976. I'm sorry. It caught me off guard. No, that was really good. That was because that's the type of joke that I would make.
Thank you,
like
Georgia.
A weird pun that
oh, I appreciate
you
it.
Don't register immediately. Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Carrie, first iteration of Carrie. Fun fact, the actress who played Carrie, Sissy Spacek, slept in her bloody clothes for 3 days while they were filming to maintain continuity when they were dousing her in blood and she was doing this big prom scene.
Wow.
Just committed. Just absolutely committed.
Wow.
80s, like, slashers, you know, like, teenagers being hunted down.
Sex.
Crazy, yes.
Sex being the thing that gets them killed.
Uh-huh. Kind of parody horror films, like, funny horror films being, you know, or maybe kitschy is the right word. Mm. You know, there's imitators, there's rip-offs happening. People are like, wow, there's...
I feel like the first, like, I mean, Scary Movie came out in, like, way after that, but that would be a kitschy, funny...
Yes.
Horror, yes. Slasher type thing.
Yeah,
which I watched when I was 11, which is way too young. What? Why would I watch Scary Movie? No, 10. 10 or 11. What was I doing? Anyway.
That's so interesting. Friday the 13th comes out in 1980. That was a really big mainstream slasher moment.
Wasn't there a Friday the 13th last month?
Was there?
I don't know.
I don't know. To be honest, I've never seen Friday the 13th. Yeah. 90s were in more...
There wasn't.
Independent
films.
It was
September.
Scream is 1996.
Yep. Which we, the writer, Michael Kennedy of It's a Wonderful Knife, took us all the actors to watch Scream 6 as like a little bonding thing
so
before
cute.
We started,
that's,
which was very
wonderful.
Cute. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It also, you know, set the tone for what we were trying to, what vibe we were trying to give off.
Mm, so yeah. Real. Yeah, there was a revival of monsters happening in the 90s. God, there's so much to talk about. Okay. Yeah, home entertainment systems were also... that touches on the 80s as well, but just VHS tapes, DVDs, making it more accessible for people to view.
And also that's what I was saying about
weird
how,
bootleg
because it was
cinema.
So much cheaper to make and so much easier mm-hmm. to access, it really helped the movie system.
Yeah.
Industry. I mean, home video actually really hurt the movie going industry, but not the movie making.
No. I mean, it posited some interesting things. We can't talk about horror without talking about Blair Witch. Let's talk about Blair Witch quickly before we go. People went to the cinemas and thought it was real.
Oh.
Because there was promo happening, like, that the actors, there was, like, missing posters for the actors.
That's
and,
great.
Like, the PR team was going overtime.
That's wonderful.
I read a thing that one of the actors' mothers was getting all this sympathy mail from viewers, which also, like, how do you find the actress's mother's address?
Well, people are creepy.
People were like, I'm so sorry. I hope you're okay. I hope you're doing well. And, you know, I hope you find your daughter. Yeah, but it was,
wow.
It was, I think that too, I mean, just the cultural impact of the Blair Witch Project
also,
is really
that was
interesting to think about.
It was cheaply made, wasn't it?
Cheaply made.
It was cheaply made.
Cheaply made. Yeah. Guys,
there's
horror,
so much.
Horror's crazy.
I will say, maybe on our ending note, we
yes.
can do a whole other episode on A24, which I think
we're gonna
we
have
should.
To.
But A24 is kind of killing it with the horror and thrillers coming out today. I think all of the horrors that I have enjoyed in the past few years have been distributed or produced by A24.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan. I think that their movies have a very specific style, which, you know, audiences appreciate. But also, their horror movies, like, I said this before, but I think it's so easy to make a horror that doesn't have much of a story, that is just blood and gore and jump scares. But I feel like a lot of, at least my favorite horror movies that have come from A24 have such interesting and intricate storylines, and the writing is great, and the acting, I'm a big fan, and yeah, loved Hereditary, loved Talk to Me. The Substance, I haven't seen, but I've heard it's horrifying.
I mean, it brought in a huge audience, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no spoilers here.
But I think, yeah, A24 is doing a really good job with horror at the moment.
Yeah.
And
just
they're kind of championing it right now.
How's that we admire?
I would say.
I would very much agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much to
talk
about.
Guys, it's
so
time
much to think.
Go. We have to
I know.
Get out. Maybe
I'm gonna. You know what? Because it was on our episode announcement, I need to throw these names in here quickly. But I'm coming back for another part two on this episode. Saw.
Yeah.
Incredibly interesting horror franchise. We've got nostalgia reboots that also apply to horror, like Beetlejuice.
Yep.
Suspiria. Alien happening with Alien Romulus.
Yes.
Nosferatu 2024 to bring it back to Nosferatu.
Really.
Yeah, isn't it? Nostalgia reboots are...
It's interesting. I mean, that's what people like these days.
The
nostalgia. Our generation is very nostalgic.
So real.
Which is kind of sad.
Guys,
but
enjoy your Friday morning.
Thank you so much for listening.
Or whenever you happen to be catching our episode.
If you're listening live, thank you for listening live.
Thank you for listening live.
Check us out on @FLMPicnic on Instagram, or you can find the recordings of our episode online at the CITR radio website.
Or on Spotify.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our episodes come out the following Tuesdays.
Yeah. And we are also loving to engage with you guys online. So thank you for being active on our social media. We really appreciate that.
So much love.
We will see you next week on Film Picnic as we continue to debunk the film industry with meaningful conversation.
One picnic at a time.
And coming up next on CITR is Discolly. Take care, guys.